Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Another Friday night. Another Tech Vibe Radio. The end of May. Good Lord, Audrey. We were just talking about a pile of books that you've been reading, and it blows my mind. Like, I wish I could read a quarter as much as you read.
Well, I have to. How do you pay, you know, like in my work, from my role, I feel like I have to know a lot about what's happening around the world. And you know, sometimes when you're in leadership roles, not everyone wants to talk to you about stuff. You know?
That's a good point.
And I need perspective.
And I also know that you're probably one of the most curious people that I know. Like, everything, you see stuff and you want to learn more.
I want to learn more. I've always been
and
like
so
that.
So you were just showing me some pictures of some books that are like on your bedside, like two piles.
Both sides, yeah.
And it's a cool list. I'm sure any book nerd out there would be like, oh my. Like,
but then on top of that, I'm always playing like 10 games of competitive Scrabble.
Right, exactly. So I can't keep up with you. But what I love is that you're bringing stuff, and we've been kind of picking some stuff that you've been reading, and we've been using it as part of our show, because I think a lot of it's very applicable.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Well, of course I'm going to gravitate to have a stack of books around quote unquote urban innovation, economic development, creativity, et cetera. I'm going to gravitate to understand what people are writing about. And, you know, I'm going to have a cynical eye on some of it. And some of it is, you know, academic leaders from MIT that have done research and, you know, like Jumpstarting America. I'm reading that right now. From cover to cover, trying to see where Pittsburgh is. They're bullish on Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. And 50 other cities. But 50, really talking
right.
about...
Talk about Pittsburgh, right.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm always fascinated in terms of what people... Everyone's always looking for the silver bullet. I mean, isn't that humankind? Everyone's looking for the silver bullet. What's going to change this?
Exactly.
Okay, we're not going to benchmark ourselves with Silicon Valley, but instead we're going to look at the heartland and understand what are the variables in the heartland, et cetera. And then invariably, I will read something about the demise of the heartland. You know, the fact that urban core is highly educated now, and suburbs are becoming urban core is not only just highly educated, become very homogenous, and that there's a whole movement towards urban being elitist, and then now our suburban neighborhoods and our exurban neighborhoods are become more diversified. So it's just it's always fascinating to me to see the shift of movement of people, et cetera. So, of course, in the work that you and I do, Jonathan, at the Tech Council, you know, I'm interested in how to grow. Our work is all about growth.
Exactly.
That is the focus of our work. That is the underpinning of everything that we do.
And not just growth, but smart growth, like the type of...
But it is growth. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we'd like it to be smart growth, but it's growth. And so the question is, you know, how do we get more people here? How do we get the right people to work to build the right companies, et cetera, et cetera? How do we build our tax base? How do we make sure that we're not leaving people behind and we become a city like Seattle that's a little numb to, you know, some of the perils of prosperity?
Absolutely.
And so I'm always interested in reading those kinds of things.
And you had this one book, it was called, was it Loon Shots?
Loon Shots by Safi Bakal. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, I can't really talk about that yet because I'm really at the beginning of it. But he's a physicist.
Right.
And he is trying to be a physicist, essentially, in terms of understanding how to build innovation, how to crazy ideas. How do crazy ideas become real? How do you punch through when you're the craziest person in the room and you think you have the most amazing idea?
Right.
What is it that makes that successful? How does that work? When does it not work? And so he takes a very interesting pathways thinking about, is it culture? Is it big companies? Is it entrepreneurship? So it's too early for me to comment on that, but it's got me it always gets me thinking about what the magic is. You know, we all are looking for the bullet. I mean, we're looking for the silver bullet. And we're looking for a way to have a path so that we can create this kind of known linear trajectory on getting us to this quote-unquote prosperity.
So I guess maybe it's the idea that there's no one linear trajectory.
Well, there isn't. I mean, Pittsburgh's story, like I told, you know, earlier today, I had a chance to talk to a bunch of people who were from the Netherlands. And they were here in Pittsburgh trying to do just some benchmarking and peel back the story a little bit about what's happening here. And, you know, I just said, we're a 40-year overnight success. I mean, that's really what it is.
That's exactly
it's
right.
For almost 40 years.
When he told them that, did their eyes
go you know,
weird
so
directions?
This is, and we're not at a success. We have to go through almost like a whole cleansing of a whole generation.
That's a good point.
And, you know, we might, so is it true that the work that we've been doing mattered? Or is it true that maybe just time had to heal it?
It could be a combination.
Right? Isn't we all like to say, whoa, we, you know, contributed this much.
Right,
we did this much. And you're like, well, wait a second. Time waits for no one. The life continues to go on. So what would have happened? How do we know what percolated?
Yeah, how do we know
how do we know what
certain
traction,
actions actually
like if
did
you look
something.
In the tech world, we haven't had any IPOs. And so then you compare ourselves to like Utah, which is a more sparsely, you know, populated and more homogenous state.
They're kicking our butts. Yeah.
So if that's one metric, right? That's just one metric. That's a capitalistic metric. I get that. But the question is, what are the variables? And what is it that's making it work or not work or whatever? No one really knows. It's all hindsight at this point.
That's a really good point.
It's really all hindsight.
And
it's
knowing,
just historical.
So I love that idea. So knowing that, then how do you really then begin to focus looking forward?
Exactly.
Right?
Like, I think I know what some of the variables are, but some of those variables are things that you and I and thousands of us don't have impact on. Right? I mean, we have guests on that talk about immigration reform.
We have one today. We have Joel Pfeffer stopping by from Iron Cove.
Right. So immigration reform. So everyone knows that you can't let smart people leave and that you need to hire people who are highly skilled.
Get as many to come in.
Right.
Exactly.
So, you know, I could tell you that that matters and that and as a result of us not having sort of the rapid growth of people who are foreign-born become citizens here has probably hurt us.
I think so.
Slugged us in some sluggish fashion.
I think we've missed tremendous numbers of opportunities for people that could not be in Pittsburgh to build their company or to work for a company.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, there might maybe slow growth is the secret to our success.
Well, I think you could say that as well. If you look at how, you know, every year when we announce our State of the Industry data, we're up a 2% here, 1% there.
Right.
It's
even though
staggering.
The population slips, we're still...
We still grow a little bit, but over 40 years, the overnight 40-year success story, we've built a very solid foundation.
Right.
It may not be the sexiest of foundations and like the ooh-wah, but we're
compound that with social media, which equals sexy and fast.
Exactly.
It's conflicting.
It's craziness. That's why I think it's fun to kind of nerd out on that a little bit. And we've got some great guests. Like we said, we have Joel Pfeffer from Meyer, Unkevich, and Scott stopping by to talk about immigration and immigration reform. We also have Adam Menzies from CGI. He is leading up their emerging practices over there. And, of course, we have Julia Pepping and Brenda Vatters.
Mm-hmm.
Vester, excuse me.
Vester.
I'm saying Vatter. Vester. I'm looking at my notes all wrong here. Really important study about how, you know, getting women in the tech workplace engaged and mobilized, which I think is really exciting stuff. So we've got a lot coming our way here on Tech Vibe Radio. Always good hanging out with you, Audrey. We're taking a quick break. We're coming right back. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Russo.
Learn more about the Tech Council at pghtech.org. So you know what, Audrey? CGI is like growing like crazy in Pittsburgh.
I know. It's really pretty amazing. They're
doing some cool work.
They actually did an acquisition of Suma.
I know.
Who had been around for quite a while and had deep technical prowess and supporting lots of companies nationally and regionally and locally. And so it's sort of stoked to have Adam Menzies in from CGI, who's now heading up new emerging technologies practice.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.
Good stuff.
And so let's talk about what does that mean? Everyone says they have something new and emerging.
Yeah, emerging or digital transformation or some other cliche buzzword, right? So for us, I think on the CGI side, we see digital transformation and innovation from a pragmatic sense. We could certainly be way out on the bleeding edge, but our customers, we try to innovate in ways that they can make something real in short term.
They can see the actual results.
Yeah, exactly.
Saving money soon, creating efficiencies quickly.
Right. Yeah, understand, like learn quickly, and then continue to innovate on top of that. So
give some examples.
Yeah. So I think when we look at, there's things around, you know, we have practices around blockchain, design thinking, machine learning. You know, there's a lot of ways you could go way out on the edge. But the reality is for most of our customers, there's a ton of low-hanging fruit that's still there, especially on the machine learning AI side, just using the basics of that for robotic process automation.
So if someone's listening right now, they might not be like you and I who understand all of this.
Sure.
So break it down a little bit.
I think when we look at decision-making that's done by folks, let's say, in a call center or a customer support, there are a lot of automation or next best actions that we could be taking. So the simple things of suggesting solutions to a call center agent as they're working on a case. So eliminating redundancy or call times, eliminating post-call activities that happen. Very low-hanging fruit from an artificial intelligence side, but starting to learn the machine's learning, kind of what actions humans take that are repeatable so you can reduce the time and effort to do that.
And increase customer satisfaction. So you're not giving your phone number five times.
Right.
I'm always amazed when I call and I give my phone number and I'm like, wow, that machine actually captured it. Like, usually people couldn't.
Yeah, where do you go next step? On the other end of that, I think there's really interesting things that we're doing farther out where for a pest control company in the South, we're doing analysis of weather data inputs along with customer and social activity and how to predict termite outbreaks.
What about this new cicada outbreak that's coming up?
Yeah, it could be similar to that. But we focus
First time in 17 years?
Yeah.
It's so on that cycle for them.
If you take in a lot of data sources around weather, moisture, pollen, and then social activity and human communication and start to be able to predict. We found that within a few months, we were able to predict with 85%+ accuracy a termite outbreak 2 to 3 weeks in advance.
No way.
So they can gear up on the extra termite.
Right. So now you can start to target marketing in advance. Right. So you start to get marketing at your house social inside a certain zip code.
I don't want to know that.
Well, it's better to know termites are coming soon than know 2 or 3 weeks after the termites
like
are here.
Movie.
Yeah, when your porch caves.
Exactly, right. So we think that's more kind of, I don't want to say bleeding edge, but it's out there a little bit more of what can be done.
I think
with
that's
that
pretty
data.
Bleeding edge, in my opinion. Yeah. I'm thinking that's pretty cool stuff where you can monitor all those disparate things and bring
That's an interesting problem.
Yeah.
So yeah.
There are a lot of small companies that could benefit from this. It's
right.
not just big company.
And if you can take repeatable models around that and start to use it for other companies, and maybe some companies are helping build the models and then smaller companies are able to take advantage of kind of what those larger companies have learned in the market, I think that's where you get to more pragmatic innovation rather than having companies kind of put all their chips on a big risk trying to see
exactly.
if something works
right.
in the market.
Actually doing some things that are going to make a difference, but you're not like putting all your chips into it. But.
Yeah, and I think that's where the advantage of working with someone like CGI. So we're 75,000 plus consultants globally.
I forgot how big you guys are. You guys have a presence. And it was so cool watching you guys build up here in Pittsburgh with the Summa acquisition. It was like you really made your presence in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
It's just so cool.
And that is the CGI model. So I come from a background of other big four consultancies. I've worked in boutiques.
Okay.
CGI, to me, after being inside the organization for 2 years, is a good mix of those two things, where we have 75,000 people globally, but the business model really is to go to market locally. So
take all that horsepower that's up there and being able to localize
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you're a customer in a metro like Pittsburgh, and we have 37 metros in the U.S. that we focus on.
That's crazy.
Most of the consultants you work with should be from Pittsburgh. So we have over 400 people here in the region
That's 400 in the Pittsburgh
area.
Yeah.
So and that's goodness. You know, and that's not counting Eastern Ohio where we have a development center. And
but you guys talk to each other, so you have expertise around the world. 37,000 or so, what other experts that you can tap into as problems arise.
Yeah. So if you're a customer in Pittsburgh, your account team, your delivery consultants, your strategists, all should be, or the majority of them should be located in Pittsburgh. Groups like I lead then come in from a national or our peer network of practices around the world can bring in expertise. We just did a smart city day in San Diego where we brought in video analytics, AR experts from Europe, from our practices to that city to have, we had HoloLenses and looking at ways to do 3-1-1 service and other things in different ways from augmented reality and virtual reality. Mm-hmm. You know, along with AI. So we can bring those experts from around the world, both on an industry or a tech space, to a specific problem in a metro market. But then you still get the same that boutique service level that you would get, because the way we talk about it, you know, the person who's responsible for delivering success, you're going to see them at the grocery store. You know, you're going to see them at your kid's ball game. They're local here.
You see him at John Eagle. My AI project's looking great.
<That's right>. Exactly.
So, Adam, what's your background?
Yeah, so my background, I started doing about 10 years of Java app development, desktop web development. Personally, at Suma, we had made two acquisitions right around the 2010 timeframe, one for a local design thinking firm, and then one for a small firm that did Salesforce. And at the time,
when
we did that,
Harvest Gold, I remember.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. I know these
absolutely,
things.
Yeah. And the principals of that firm are still with us at CGI right now in the Salesforce group. So when that happened, I moved over to focus on Salesforce and have been mostly focused in the platform as a service or design thinking space for almost 10 years. And that's a big part of what I lead at CGI.
So you get to have a lot of fun at the end of the day. You got that
local, it is a good time.
You got the local presence, you got the horsepower of CGI behind you, solving some really complex stuff. I mean, that whole termite example is just kind of, I just think that's so cool, man. Right. That's awesome.
So are you a native Pittsburgher?
I am, yeah. Born and raised in Pittsburgh, went to Pitt.
Cool.
Stayed in the region.
Yes, Pitt.
Do you get to travel a little bit, CGI?
I travel all over, mostly the U.S., but it's a good spot. I get to see a lot of innovation happening at our larger customers around the country.
What do you think about what's happening in Pittsburgh right now?
I think it's pretty tremendous. I talk to people from around the country, and they either agree with that or they are surprised when they get here. I was here 10 years ago, and what it is now.
They see the difference.
And they're so impressed with what we're building
here. You're like, CGI's here for a reason because there's tons of opportunity.
Thank you for being a good ambassador.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
And people learn more about
as much talent back as we can, right?
And if people learn more about CGI, with CGI.com, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. CGI.com would be a good way.
And through that, you can tunnel in, kind of see what's going on the Pittsburgh side of things.
Absolutely.
With your downtown presence. You have some awesome office space downtown.
We do. We have a great office space right downtown in the old Alcoa headquarters, so we'd love to have people come down and see the space.
It's great. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Absolutely.
Making Pittsburgh proud. Great stuff. Hey, we're taking a quick break. We're coming back with more Tech Vibe Radio. So much more coming on. What a great way to kick off the show, Audrey. Too much fun. Hey, learn more about the Tech Council by going to pghtech.org. Follow us on Twitter at PGHTech. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
This is Audrey Russo.
So, Audrey, you're going to be very excited about this segment because this is near and dear to your heart and everything like that. When it comes to all things, getting as much international presence in Pittsburgh, getting as many foreign-born people into Pittsburgh, just as much talent into Pittsburgh, and it all comes with immigration. And I know this is a thing, so I'm going to let you take the control.
Yeah, we have an expert in the house
that
we're going to do a quick deep dive with. And he's been doing this work for a while. So I am pleased to tell you who's in the house.
I'm Joel Pfeffer. I'm a partner at Meyer, Unkevich & Scott, law firm in downtown Pittsburgh, and I'm pleased to be here, Audrey.
It's great. We are going, you've been there and doing work in law for quite a while, right?
I've been there for over 30 years.
That's
really?
Fantastic.
Yes.
And you have, how would you describe your expertise? What's your niche?
I do a lot of business immigration, bringing foreign talent to the United States, assisting companies who need foreign talent to bring them to the United States, either temporarily or on a permanent basis.
And so given the backdrop over the last decade in terms of immigration reform, and the changes in immigration law, or the lack of changes, whatever. I mean, I want you to give us your perspective here. What, you know, we in Pittsburgh have some of the best and brightest people who come to school here, come to learn, get plugged into the community, sitting next to people who are doing amazing things in terms of intellectual property that could change lives and change the world. They want to stay. They very often want to stay, and very often they're not from, you know, the U.S.
Okay. There's several steps that they typically take to stay in the United States. A student will apply for optional practical training. That is a period of 1 to 3 years, depending on their degree and the employer that they would work for in a period of training after graduation. They could seek to get an H-1B visa, which is a visa for professionals filling professional positions, being paid the prevailing wage, which they can remain here for up to 6 years. And during that time, they would typically seek to establish that there is no U.S. worker available with to fill their position, or they could establish that they are of outstanding ability, they are in the national interest, they are filling a research position in a company that needs them and needs them because of their track record in having made a valuable contribution to a field of scientific endeavor. That leads to something called a green card or permanent resident status. And then several years later, they can apply for U.S. citizenship. That's the path they typically take.
Mm-hmm. That's a long path, too. Like, that is...
Is it a long path?
That is a very long path, and particularly if you are from India or China.
Right.
Because we have a quota system in the United States.
Okay.
We only allow in 140,000 people who are in the employment-based immigration categories. So putting aside family-based, you are in the cases we're talking, the situations we're talking about, we only allow 140,000. No country can get more than approximately 7% of that number. India is a very large country. It has sent us some very highly talented people.
Right.
And there are many people from India who have gone through the process I've described and are seeking to remain here, but must wait for their turn because there is a big line of people from India having already exhausted that small percentage of the 140,000 over several years. And looking forward, the people who are starting now could wait up to 10 years for to become a permanent resident of the United States. So that's really one of our problems here in the United States when it comes to seeking foreign talent. China is another country that has a backlog, although not as serious as India. But the numerical limitation, the quota on labor, on skilled labor or unskilled labor, is something that is preventing people from remaining here. During that wait time, they could continue in H-1B status, but most people would like to have their situation resolved quicker than 10 years.
I would think so. That's a long time to wait.
And it's a long time for a for a company to be waiting.
That is correct.
That's a good point.
That is a long time for a company to wait for talent. And perhaps what is even more difficult for companies is not knowing whether you can get into the pool, for example, of H-1Bs.
Okay.
H-1Bs are subject to their own numerical limitation called a cap, which means we only allow in 85,000 each year of professionals filling professional positions, being paid prevailing wage, 85,000 new such individuals, typically coming out of school or coming off the optional practical training program I discussed a moment ago. And there's a lottery, or a computer-aided selection process. That the
computer-aided selection.
Yes, not aided, computer selection process. It's all by
CSP,
computer.
Right?
Yes,
the CSP.
Computer selection process that selects the 85,000, 65,000 regular, honest-to-goodness college graduates or people with equivalent experience to equate to a college degree, and an additional 20,000 who have U.S. master's degrees. The government conducts this lottery every year during the first business week of April, and that's going on right now. And attorneys and employers are waiting to see who made the cut and who didn't.
Is it favored by the coasts or anything to that effect?
No, it's all a national lottery.
Okay.
There are two service centers that accept petitions, one in the east, one in the west. But it's all a national lottery.
So what hopes do we have?
Well, there's been talk over the years about comprehensive immigration reform.
Mm-hmm, right. I remember that in the Obama administration.
Yes,
right?
And in the Bush administration.
Right.
President Bush tried very hard
to
get comprehensive mm-hmm. immigration reform passed. But in order to get comprehensive immigration reform passed, there are going to be five issues on the table.
Okay, what are they?
Well, the one that we just talked about, employment-based quotas. How many employment-based permanent residents are we going to admit each year? How many do we need? There hasn't been a change in this since 1986.
In the number.
Oh, my. The number hasn't changed since 1986. And there needs to be an evaluation of how many we need every year and whether there should be a per-country limitation. Should there be, India can only get a certain percentage mm-hmm. and back their people up 10 or shorter periods of time in whatever category they're in. That's one issue that's going to have to be addressed. Another one is the H-1B situation, or what I'll call the guest worker programs. Mm-hmm. We have a guest worker. H-1B is really a professional guest worker program.
Right.
We have non-professional guest worker programs called H-2B. Both of those have quotas, limitations, time periods in which you can apply. Very complicated process. Not certain that you'll get it. There needs to be, what can we do better to stimulate business in the United States, to stimulate innovation? These professionals are necessary for that process, and we need to...
Well, they come here to get educated.
They come here to get educated, and there are certain segments of the political population that wants them to return, and others want them to stay. And that's something that that politically will have to be resolved in comprehensive immigration reform.
Joel, is it possible for that person who can't get the H-1B, if they go back to their country, could still be employed by the company and work with telepresence? Or is that breaking the rules?
They can be employed abroad. Our laws only control who works here.
Inside the borders.
Inside the borders.
Gotcha. Okay.
Let me just cover the other three issues that I think have to be covered. Amnesty, the big one.
Right.
What happens to all the people who are illegal? Is there a path to green card or permanent resident or citizenship? Family-based immigration. Will U.S. citizens still be able to bring parents from abroad without any numerical limitation?
Is that allowed now still?
It's allowed for adult citizens. You can't just have a child here and then become legal by your child bringing you. That's a myth.
Right.
The child has to be 21.
Okay,
so it's allowed.
Interesting. Okay.
But I would say that in comprehensive immigration reform, that's going to be on the table.
Right.
Bringing brothers and sisters is going to be on the table. And the fifth thing that I think will be on the table is e-verify. Companies e-verify is a program right now. It's voluntary that requires employers to verify work status for new employees. The Bush administration tried very hard to make it mandatory, but I think that'll be on the table in a discussion about comprehensive immigration reform.
So what changed over the last 30 years in terms of immigration? I mean, at one point, we were letting lots of people into our country, right? It wasn't job-related. What was the shift? Was the shift after World War II? Was the shift... just to understand some of the trends that have happened?
I would say the shift has become the need for higher skilled or professional level. The technology world needs more people. Technology is being addressed, being developed abroad, and we need to bring them here. 30, 40 years ago, we needed unskilled labor. 50 years ago, we needed unskilled labor. Okay.
Now it's skilled labor, which
skilled
is changed.
Labor,
it makes sense.
And that's become a challenge when the numbers don't adjust.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we got about a minute or so left. I mean, what would be your one big wish that something could be reformed first to help Pittsburgh, help our companies get the talent they need, help us become more vibrant? What would be your big wish?
My big wish would be that the H-1B program might be divided into different kinds of companies.
Right.
A company engaged in innovation or technology might have a separate set of numbers available to them.
Mm.
There's also green cards available for highly skilled exceptional ability, outstanding professors and researchers, people who can research for companies, and people who can do work for companies engaged in research, and perhaps expanding those numerical limits.
Very cool. Joel Pfeffer.
It has been great.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
And they can find you on the Meyer Unkovic website, right?
Yes, muslaw.com.
Just that simple. Jill, thank you for stopping by and talking about this.
For your leadership in this as well.
Thank you.
We're taking, we're taking a quick break. We're coming back with more Tech Vibe Radio. This is Jonathan Kirstein.
And this is Audrey Russo.
We're from the Pittsburgh Technology Council. Learn more about the Tech Council at pghtech.org. Audrey, I like to save the best for last. Yeah. Got some important stuff to talk about. Like, I'm excited that we have a little more time with our longest segment of the show to stretch out and talk a little bit about what's going on here. So we got some important guests with us. We need some introductions here, Julie. Let's start with you. You're no stranger to the show. You've been on Tech Vibe before.
Yeah. It was 4 years ago, believe it or not.
Was it that long?
No
way.
Oh,
my goodness.
Yes, it was. Oh, wow. My gosh.
I didn't do the second year. I think you had some other
folks. Oh, that's what it was.
That's right.
Yeah. So I'm Julia Pepping, and in addition to being an independent IT consultant, I'm very active in Red Chair Pittsburgh, which is a network of women and men who advocate for gender balance in the technology professions.
We love your work. Very good stuff. Yeah. We need more of it. And we have, of course, we have Brenda here.
Yes, hello.
So, Brenda, what's your background?
Oh, okay,
what do you do? Yeah, absolutely.
Nice, Brenda.
What are you doing here, Brenda?
We're glad you're here.
I'm Brenda Vester. I'm a partner with Thrive, and Thrive is a software company. We host digital conversations, and we're able to measure those conversations through cognitive technology that's built in.
Super, really cool technology. Yeah. Thrive has been on the show before talking about what you guys do.
That's correct. You talked to one of our co-founders, Dan Stafira.
I know Dan.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
So, Southside guys.
That's right. Oh,
that's what I'm talking about.
So we're going to talk about a study, right? Jump in and talk about a study.
So Brenda and I met, I'd say last summer maybe, just sat down for a meet and greet, got to meet this person. And we started talking, we were talking about Red Chair Pittsburgh, and I was sort of bemoaning the fact that we really want to have data to operate on because that's the world that she operates in. And it's like, I wish we had something that would help us determine, rather than just anecdotes, what we should do next, what's important in Pittsburgh for women in tech. And she suggested a study. I'll let her tell you about it. Of course, I jumped in.
I'm thrilled to have the chance to work with Red Chair in that community. And you know, what we find with big data, right, everybody wants to make decisions based on data. And sometimes that larger data isn't applicable to certain populations. So we thought, well, let's go and have a we decided to have a 12-week conversation with the Red Chair Pittsburgh group specifically. So it was a voluntary study.
Opt-in.
They opted in.
It sounds like a big undertaking. It's a lot of folks.
You know, our cognitive scientist, Jay-Z, would agree with you. After I committed to doing that, I said, Brenda.
Sure.
It's not only did we do the digital conversation for 12 weeks, but underneath that, we measured three key behaviors, areas, self-efficacy, which is confidence, inclusivity, and positivity. So all of those things are correlated with, other studies and what would they say, women aren't confident. So is that really true? That seems like a really broad statement.
Or is that true for women in
Pittsburgh? That sounds like a terrible thing to say.
Right. That's exactly right.
Or is it true for the women in Pittsburgh technology? We want to look specifically at what's unique about our population.
Okay, yeah.
Are we different?
Bringing it down
here. I guess it doesn't matter if we're different because we're focused on serving that community.
Right.
That's right. That's right. So we went through that study and found out some really interesting correlations. But
talk about how the study's designed. I don't know if, because I think that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, tell us.
Right,
because
it's not a study that is traditional. So the Thrive, basically we use what's called ecological momentary assessment. So the technology itself is cloud-based and is, a link is sent to somebody's phone in a text message. They open that up and in 60 seconds answer a few questions in a conversation
about how you're feeling then, right?
Right. Just, hey, how you doing, Brenda?
It gets you at the moment.
It's very conversational.
How's it going?
So it doesn't feel like you're being studied. But what we wanted to capture was, kind
like
of
I'm
how you're feeling in the moment. You know, ecological momentary assessment is really capturing the data when it's happening. Mm-hmm. You know, as humans, we're not very good at remembering what, if I asked you 2 weeks ago, how are you feeling on Tuesday?
Mm-hmm.
I don't, and if I asked you in the future, you may not know how things, you know, might impact you then. So we capture it in the moment. Then we can look at that collectively over time and say, oh, well, here's kind of what's happening. So we looked at a lot of things, and we still have more to bring out. But, you know, when we looked at inclusion, right, mm-hmm. do women feel included? And we found a correlation between higher levels of positivity and higher levels of confidence. If women had both of those, they felt more included. Right. So we're still, you know, we don't, you know, that's one thing to say, okay, if we can focus on those things. So Julia is looking at what do they do for the Red Chair group and, you know, how do we actually take action from some of that information? So that was one of them. But I think the other one we really are interested in too is, you know, if you have 3 to 5 people in your support network, and that's a work network. We were just talking before. Mm-hmm.
Work-related.
Work-related network, right?
Doesn't count as my mom?
Doesn't count as your
mom.
My
dad counts.
Okay.
He was my mentor all through my whole life.
Then he counts.
Yeah. Okay. So if they understand what work you're doing. So if you have that.
And can get a perspective on it, yeah.
Right. You probably have higher levels of confidence. So we need to unpack this a little bit more. But this, you know, we just got the end of the study in March. And so this is still very fresh in terms of looking at you know, one of the things that Thrive captures as well is kind of those micro behaviors. So we ask people today, what made you feel included? You know, because really inclusivity is something we're really trying to focus on.
It's a number
culture.
Of little things that kind of add up to making you feel like you're part of something.
Right. And they're really, especially for things that happen with women, it's really hard to identify, like, you know, I know I don't feel something's off, you know, but these little micro behaviors start to add up and make you feel that you're not included. So we're able to look at that. We have a lot of commentary that we're looking at, and we'll share more of that as time goes on. You know, some of those things that my whole goal is always to make it actionable.
Right. Yeah. So, that's what I was going to ask you.
So, yeah. So a couple things that we took from that is, one, Redshirt Pittsburgh has for the past few years offered leadership development scholarships for mid-career women in tech. And one of those scholarships is the Pittsburgh Technology Council EDGE program. And what you come out of the EDGE program with, and what I've heard from women when I ask them, you know, where are you now? How'd it go? They still have that cohort of 5 or 6 people that they were teamed up with.
It's stuck
with
them. To kind
of like say, support each other in your career. If you have questions, reach out, meet occasionally. So that creates, even if you don't have that or you don't have friends that understand your work, you've got that cohort that's going to help you and kind of cheer you on and give you some courage to go forward.
So, you know what I've heard from the EDGE cohort? We're into our third now. What's really interesting is in each one of these classes, over 50% of the women have moved into new roles.
Isn't that amazing?
Or new jobs.
That is such a cool stat.
And
like, bang,
we're going to do a little bit more of a qualitative study of it.
Love it.
Because I'm very focused on the outcomes, and it's a very different model than most people might say what is training
or
what
leadership.
Is learning.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually every cohort, there's usually one or two people that want to do an interview with me. They, you know, that's part of one of their assignments. Mm-hmm. And really what it boils down to for them, for me, in terms of my little sample, is that every person that I met has deep technical competencies. Like they're good at it. And so their boss or their superiors or their colleagues give them more to do because they know they're going to get it done and they can count on them. And as a result, their shoulders become wider and wider. And the likelihood of them being visionaries
and
in visionary roles.
Time to speak their accomplishments. They're too busy working.
Well, but they're also busy doing the things over and over again that people
that
rely on them, that they're good at. And so what they see through this EDGE program is they lift their head up and go, wait a second, what am I really doing?
Yep.
And
what do I really want?
Well, I think it's for women who are accomplished and are just saying that seems to be the model and they themselves are reinforcing it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it's been really interesting for me to hear them talk about this and then at the same time not feel confident.
I couldn't
agree
more.
To lift their head.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't
that's
that
getting
right?
complex.
And so that just blows my mind because I'm like, if I look at your career to date, there's been nothing, There's actually, success. I had a lot more failure in my life than what you did at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that the it's confidence that, thing is very tricky.
Right.
It's,
so I'm using that word maybe erroneously.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I don't want to be broad
courage.
Sweeping.
Courage could be another word for it. I mean, I think I had a lot of advice in my career saying, be courageous. Like, don't be afraid of being shot down. And mm-hmm. I think that's mm-hmm. some of that's just an institutional how you're raised. And that's something that Christy addresses very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being a good girl, not speaking out, you know, that sort of thing. So I did want to jump into a couple of other mentor things sure. that mm-hmm. we're working on. We have a student project that is actually the students are building a mentor connection piece onto our website. So people in the Red Chair Pittsburgh community can say, hey, I'm happy to mentor somebody. And somebody can say,
nice.
I'm happy
you can
to
match them up. Then.
Yeah. To pair right. up where you have, you know, common things that you might want to
instant
work
result here. Instant action.
Exactly.
Seeing that people need this now providing a platform
there
for
you
people
go.
To connect.
So
when will that be live?
The students, you know how that goes, student project. It's going to be great. It finishes up in May, and then we're going to kind of go through a beta period.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So in the summer, maybe.
Yeah, during the summer. And then we'll launch it at our November event.
Very cool.
November 15th event.
And people will be able to find that through the Red Chair Pittsburgh site?
Yep, redchairpgh.org.
Very cool.
And I would just add on that, I think mm-hmm. one of the things that the study has done, and we call it a study, but we can do kind of a light, you know, conversation that we host digitally to get – you know, kind of that in the field information, which is very rare to be able to do through technology. So one of the things I think that we're seeing with that is it's very specific to the people Julie is serving. So the first step in design thinking is empathize with your audience. And we can do that pretty quickly. So now Julie has really clear data, understanding of what the population needs, and is able to make decisions, you know, that are impactful to that instead of these broad strokes that big data shows. And not to say that that's not important.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But
right.
whoever you're serving, that population matters. So.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So we've got just a little bit of time left.
Yeah.
I want to make sure people can actually read some of this because I think there's a great blog post on Thrive Sites. Mm-hmm. If you go to gothrive.io/blog, you can find the An Inclusive Pittsburgh post there. And it kind of lays out a lot of this stuff so you can kind of sink into it. And yeah. get engaged and be part of this. We just think it's so exciting that you're doing this work. It's never been done before.
Mm-hmm. No.
I mean,
no,
this is like kind of some groundbreaking stuff, and we're so glad you're doing because this is what's mm-hmm. making Pittsburgh a better tech ecosystem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Getting
right.
more women engaged, more men engaged, getting everybody all rowing the boat the same way. Exciting stuff.
And the deadline for the scholarship, I want to get that plug in, is June 15th. So
perfect.
If somebody's interested, they can find the application.
Good. Absolutely.
PGH.org.
Perfect.
June 15th
awesome.
Deadline.
We got it.
Okay.
We're all out of time. Another Tech Vibe under the belt. I know. It's like a time machine. We'll be back next Friday here on KDK. This is Jonathan Kirsting.
And this is Audrey Rousseau.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.